Congratulations to the Pittsburgh Penguins for their second straight Stanley Cup championship.
Yep. And let the hyperbole begin. And it's I always sort of giggle a little bit when I hear it. Well, and now hockey's over. No, the games are over. Hockey is a 12-month conversation, and the conversation continues as we now talk about expansion and no wave clauses. And then the awards and how the players are going to be unveiled in Vegas and the NHL draft and free agency and...
Nope.
How's it going,
Whit? I'm getting off the merry-go-round. I don't care about any of that stuff.
You're done,
They handed out the Stanley Cup and I feel like my work here is done. You guys can handle that expansion draft malarkey.
Is it just me or did this season seem longer than, you know, the previous, I don't know, 4 or 5 seasons?
It did.
Like this one, this one was really pronounced. This one really sort of hit home about how long it was.
Yeah, I think part of that's the election of Trump, where everything in life now seems like it's longer,
like it's tedious,
and more stressful and tedious. Yeah.
But I don't know. You know what I think part of it was? Honestly, you know what I think part of it was? The injuries in the final became such a story, and I couldn't help but saying to myself, and I guess I say it every year. I think we've talked about it before. What if these two teams played healthy?
Oh, I agree.
Who wins that series?
I think it would be extraordinarily closer than it was. And for the specific, sorry, my phone's going. For the specific reason that, you know, for those who didn't watch the Predators in their run in the West, the Johansson, Arvidsson, Forsberg line was as important as Pekka-Rinne. And when they needed, I mean, not only did they put up incredible numbers, but like they were relied upon to change the tone and tenor of games. They were, as they call them, game changers. And so when you look at games 5 and 6 in the series and you see the way they were played and you see how closely they were played and you see how there was those moments in which the Predators needed a goal desperately, either to respond to the Penguins in game 5 or to get on the board, you know, provided the referee doesn't blow his whistle in game 6. And that's where they really miss Johansson. And I agree with you. I think more so than Letang, because the Penguins have proof of concept now they can win without Letang. More so than with Letang, I think Johansson's absence from the final changed the complexion of that series and is the giant what if hanging over it.
Yeah, like why are we so in love with this war of attrition? Why are we so in love with this idea of let's weaken these teams as much as we can until the final? And then decide who the champion is. I don't know the way around it. They're not going to stop playing 82 games. They're not going to stop playing 4 rounds of best of 7 hockey. I just don't know. Like I come away at the end of it saying, you know, did we really get an accurate snapshot of who? And maybe you never can anyway. So I'm just, you know, shaking my fist at the clouds. Are we getting an accurate snapshot of who the best team is?
Well, that's a really interesting philosophical question because you seem to want to approach the cup being handed out as the best team should win, and the
Which
best
is why
team
I put more of a premium on the 82 games. So
so it's like, you know,
deal.
Who at the height of their powers deserves to hoist this chalice? And I'm more enamored with who is the survivor of this season that is able to make it to the end and win 4 games. Here's your prize.
But injuries are so much a function of luck, right? Like we criticize the shootout for a number of things. One of it because it's sort of arbitrary and a lot of it is based on luck. Yet we give that team that makes it to the Stanley Cup final relatively unscathed as, you know, well, they're the legitimate champions because, you know, they survived, you know, this gauntlet of 4 rounds. When if you look at injuries as a function of luck, you say to yourself, well, did we really get the best quote unquote champion? But then again, I always catch myself and say to myself, there's probably no real way to determine that anyhow. And this is perhaps the most entertaining way to do so. I just find this idea like, you know, you weaken teams through 3 rounds and then, okay, now we're going to determine who the best team is when they're nowhere close to the height of their powers. I don't know.
Retort number one is obviously that everything in hockey is a function of luck along with injuries.
A lot of it is.
Right. Yep. And then the other response is that's why, you know, the idea that it is a war of attrition, the idea that injuries do happen, and how you respond to those injuries is the key to whether or not you become a champion. To me, that's the essence of hockey. Is the essence of hockey is how do you deal with adversity? How do you respond to a goal? How do you respond to a losing streak? How do you respond to your goalie having a bad night? How do you respond to your goalie getting hurt? How do you respond to losing your best defenseman? And to me, it's even more of a measure of a champion, more of a measure of greatness when you show that you can. And in the Penguins' case, the idea that they won a cup, with all due respect to two and a half rounds of Marc-Andre Fleury and a round and a half of Matt Murray, they won a cup with that defense. That is, to me, for all the talk about Sid and Gino and all this other stuff, that's the story that really kind of needs to be told. I'm actually going to write about it on Puck Daddy, and I'm doing the usual thing what I do on this podcast, which is to noodle through my ideas. But the idea that that defense, Dumoulin, Schultz, Cole, you know, Daly,
Mata,
whatever percentage of Daly was there, whatever percentage of Cole was there, he was banged up too.
Whatever percentage of Mata was there.
Oh, I would say that was 100% of Mata making 60% of the turnovers each game. But like that, the idea that they won with that blue line, I mean, as you often say on this podcast, it's a copycat league. No one's going to look at that blue line and say, oh, we can win without defensemen. Because you can win without defensemen if you have Matt Murray and Sidney Crosby. But I just, it's amazing to me that they were able to patchwork it through. And the full marks for that, by the way, the full marks for that go to two guys. Sergei Gonchar, who's a coach for the Penguins, and he's always around the team, and he's done a remarkable job with those defensemen. And Jacques Martin, who is the guy responsible for defensive deployment on the bench. I mean, I am in awe that they held it together and won four rounds of the playoffs with that group.
But what did they do? The Penguins, more so than anything else, kept pucks active in the offensive zone. They didn't back up.
Right.
Right? And that was allowing the wingers to regroup in the neutral zone. Like, that's the system. That's that, you know, Mike Sullivan's system. That's what you want.
There were large swaths of bend but don't break defense where the Penguins, as has been chronicled, I think they're the first team outside of the top 10 in Corsi to win a cup in recent memory. And, maybe ever.
But I think they're top 10 in Fenwick, so you get rid of the block shots.
Okay. But like you go back to these games in the playoffs though, and I mean, there were times when you know, whether it was the Capitals or the Predators or whomever, just carried the play. And you're looking at that defense. Somehow they're winning puck battles, and somehow they're blocking shots, and somehow they're not allowing high danger chances against these teams.
See, when you said that, you know, a lot of it is because of two people. I thought you were going to say Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. You have two of the greatest centermen to ever play the league, and that covers up a lot of your mistakes. And then you can be that outlier team that gets outshot 17 of 25 games. And say to yourself, well, we have Crosby, you don't. We have Malkin, you don't. It's one of, if perhaps not, you know, the most, you know, outside of net minding, the most crucial position in the game today. And we have two of the best. Yeah. One of which may be the very best at that position.
Which also helps when, you know, the other side is throwing Colton Sissons out at you. Not to disparage Colton Sissons, but come on already.
No, you're right. And again, coming back to that, that's where the Ryan Johansson injury hurts. And that's where, you know, all of a sudden Fisher gets bumped up and Yarncroke gets bumped up. And, you know, they're out of what would naturally be their normal position where the team can play at its full complement. I know Crosby won the Conn Smythe Trophy, but I think so much of this, Matt Murray was outstanding, you know, back-to-back shutouts.
He
in
was
last
incredible
two games for
in
sure.
Game six,
man,
was amazing.
Crosby and Malkin directing with the puck was spectacular. Honestly. I don't think that can be underscored enough.
I think Sid won it for two reasons. One, because they'll never give it to a player for three rounds, which is why Erik Karlsson didn't get it, although he deserved it.
Who gave him that one vote, do you think?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out who gave Gensel his first place vote. Cause I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, like, the kid had a great playoff. He had amazing, goal total. I think I saw a stat that said the only two players that had as many or more even strength goals than him since like 94 were Joe Sakic and Marian Gaborik in the playoffs. But he's a product of Crosby. Let's be honest here.
Let me ask, of course, you can get in the puck. Let me ask you this. if the ballots were not anonymous, would the voters, the one that gave one to Carlson and to Gensel, would the voting still have been exactly the same?
Not at all. No, they wouldn't have never done that. They don't. It's pretty clear from being in those professional hockey writers meetings that these guys don't want to invite that kind of thing on them when they vote for things like awards. So it is what it is. But the other thing I was going to say about Sid and winning the Conn Smythe, though, like, I think there's a separation between the people that were on this series traveling back and forth between Pittsburgh and Nashville and people that were just watching the series. Because when you're in that room and you start talking to people about what Sid does beyond what he accomplishes on the ice, mm-hmm. it's without question he's the engineer. Like, he's driving the train. Like, you know, he is the guy behind the scenes on the ice. Wherever you want to point, Crosby's hands are all over this team. And look no further than, I mean, he won the Conn Smythe in Game 5, drawing the penalty in the first 50 seconds, assisting on the power play goal, 3 assists in a crucial game, skating at twice the speed of everybody else on the ice, pretty much. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you're around the Penguins that he's the MVP, but I know that you can make an argument for Gino, too. And I know a lot of the argument about Gino is, well, they'll never give it to the Russian, so I get that, too.
I think that, you know, when you have someone like Sidney Crosby in your organization, he sets a work rate that is so high that everybody underneath him is embarrassed not to follow. Mm-hmm. Like, when your best player is playing like that, like, you look at his resume already and what he's accomplished. It's Hall of Fame. This is before this year, before this year's Conn Smythe, before this year's Stanley Cup. And he's still the hardest working guy on the team. Mm-hmm. And he's still, you know, the guy that's trying to improve his skills. He's still the guy that works at a rate that is, you know, inspiring and scary at times. And right. I think if you're Connor Sheary, if you're Jake Gensel, if you're Brian Dumoulin, if you're whomever, you're embarrassed / scared not to work that hard too.
Exactly. And scared
days
to work.
Off.
My two favorite moments about Sid in the aftermath of Game 6 were Jim Rutherford was talking about Sid and we're like, you know, why is he so good? Why is he such a good leader? And Jim Rutherford said, what? And I said, why is Sidney Crosby such a good leader? And he goes, oh, Sidney, okay. Well, he drives the train. And if you're not on the train, you're going to get run over. I'm like, oh, there you go. There it is right there. And then the other
we're saying the same thing. Jim and I just essentially said the exact same thing.
Yeah, but it was funnier when he did it because he's so
he just wanted to use a train metaphor. That's
fuddy-duddy.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
and then okay. He gave me a Werther's. Pat me on the head, be on my way. But the greatest thing ever was Sid was asked by somebody, and I think it's a really good question. Like, he has literally now accomplished everything you can accomplish in this game. Gold medals, World Cup, three
individual
cups.
Awards,
individual
team
awards,
team awards,
back-to-back
in the conversation for top 5 in the history of the game, all of it.
And they asked him, what is it? Why do you keep coming back? Why do you do this to yourself? And he said, without missing a beat, it's for this moment. Like, that guy, you know, his narcotic is winning. His narcotic is being around those boys in the locker room and getting champagne sprayed in his face and raising the cup and having the party at his house where people are jumping in the pool. And, like, all that stuff is what drives Crosby and I'm sure in some ways validates the effort he puts into it. And I thought that was a really interesting answer. It was very much like – it was very much like, don't you guys get it? like, weren't you out there? Didn't you see, like, how happy everybody was? And, mm-hmm. And that's why you do this every year.
It is interesting, too, hey, because you look, you know, when he went down in the playoffs with the concussion and everyone said, you know, Crosby really, there was some who said, Crosby should never play again. You know, step away from the game.
Yeah.
He's already done
yeah.
this. Why is he doing this to his health? And we know he has the issues, of course, with concussions, but, you know, I'm with you. Like, he's someone who, in his own mind, isn't done. He hasn't spent that capital yet. You know, there's the old saying, the minute you think about retiring, you're retired. Mm-hmm. And when you watch Crosby play, you say to yourself, that's someone who hasn't for a moment thought about retiring yet.
Yeah.
Like, there's some guys you can watch, you say, yeah, you know what? In his mind, you kind of get the sense that he's thinking, yeah, I can see the clubhouse here. You know, I'm well on the back nine of the career. But I never get that sense from Crosby. Even though, to your point, he has won everything you can imagine in the game right now. I guess the only thing maybe left for him to do is win it with another team.
I love it.
Honestly, oh, like what else is there? Sorry, Penguins fan. I know it's listen, your team's just won the Stanley Cup and congratulations. But if you're looking for the challenge, you know, to do it some, you know, for that next level, you know, isn't it the Messier challenge? Okay, guy. Now do it with another team.
Boy, it would take a falling out with the Penguins for that to happen, and I don't know in what scenario there would be a falling out, because obviously
I don't think it happens. I think he stays a Pittsburgh Penguin. He, you know, retires. I don't know, maybe he ends up, you know, running the entire hockey program at Penn State on a, you know, just to pass the time one day. I don't know, but he stays there.
There's three scenarios in which this happens in the NHL. One, falling out with ownership, probably not going to happen. Two,
not going to happen.
Meets a woman from Los Angeles. Always possible.
Okay. Yeah.
Three,
right? Okay.
Three, wants to go play with his best friend. So what we need is for Nathan MacKinnon to somehow entice Crosby to come to Colorado. With Crosby and Kunitz to come to Colorado.
They trade for
Fleury. And then there's your scenario. Sit in Colorado with MacKinnon, Fleury, and Kunitz for one last ride.
Yeah. Nah, not going to see it. Not going to see it. But honestly,
hey,
I'm
just happy the Penguins held off on that trade for of Malkin to the Kings.
Oh, God. How many years ago is that now? Still bringing that up?
I think 2008, 2009. Now, all right. Oh, listen, Smarty Pants. Where do you put Sid in the Pantheon? Rutherford was saying top three or four of all time.
Wow. Okay, I mean, God, this is all so subjective. Or Gretzky. Oh, here's the question.
Is he better than Mario?
That's it. Do you put him over? Because that to me is the conversation. Do you put him over Mario? I'll put him over
it's
Richard.
So hard because
I'll put him over Beliveau.
Mario was, Gordy. I mean, I didn't get to see a lot of Gretzky in the 80s.
Oh my
so
God.
So Mario was the most spectacular ridiculous. Offensive player I've ever seen. I mean, Mario did things that I've never seen before. We'll never see again for a guy of his size.
He is, but, I've always said this, he is the best, from a skills point of view, the best single hockey player I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
Mario.
Without question.
Without a doubt.
Is Sid a more complete player though? Is he better defensively than Mario was?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think I put him over Mario Lemieux. I think he's the best Pittsburgh Penguin ever, period.
Good luck finding a Penguins fan. They'll agree with you. They built a Rich Pilon statue that featured Mario outside the arena, man. They love the guy.
That's all subjective. Okay, but honestly, let me get back to the original point. What's left for Crosby other than just volume? Just okay. Now more. I'm going back to the buffet. I'm still hungry, so I'm still going to eat.
I'll give you what's left. You know, we actually haven't had in many years. True dynasty. A true dynasty. Two in a row is not a dynasty.
I don't even know what that means anymore.
That's a back to back. Three in a row. Three in a row and four since, what is it? 2009.
The 3-6 for Chicago, we call that a dynasty. Now we're saying, you know, the back to back in the salary cap is the
three in a row hasn't been done since Gretzky, my friend. Mario couldn't even do three in a row. And I'll tell you this about this Penguins
game. I know, yeah, that's right. He got Volek.
I'll tell you this about this Penguins team. The recipe for their success, insofar as repeating as champion in a salary cap league, is they have committed 44% of their cap to four players, one of whom didn't play in the playoffs, but the other three did, and they were all really, really good in Malkin, Kessel, and Crosby. And the rest of the roster is filled with veteran guys that they got on the cheap and rookies and young players that were either on their entry-level contracts or just coming off of it. And I think that there is still a recipe for this team to win three in a row if they get a couple of bridge contracts, Connor Sheary being one of them, and they smartly reallocate the cap space they're going to get from Fleury to maybe another defenseman. I know that three in a row sounds real tough because, but what are you going to say?
Can they do three in a row with that defense? I would say no. I think if you're going to do three in a row, you roll the dice with, I still think at the end of it, you're going to need a healthy Chris Letang.
Yes, I would agree for the next run. And then add another defenseman to the mix with the Fleury money. Keep everybody cheap. Gensel's still on his entry level. Rust and Sheary might be up, but I think maybe Sheary's definitely up. He's definitely an RFA. But there's a chance that they could retain much of this roster and enhance it with the money you're getting from Fleury. And if you're asking me what hasn't been done, three in a row hasn't been done since the 1980s. Yzerman couldn't do three in a row. Mario couldn't do three in a row. And the East does not belong to Austin Matthews yet. You can get out of the East. You know you could get past the Capitals, for God's sakes. They might as well just throw the towel into the middle of the rink in game one and play the Capitals.
I am curious about Austin Matthews though next year and that entire team. Because contrary to belief from some outlets, the Maple Leafs rebuild is done.
Oh yeah.
And it's win now time. It's win now time. Right? That's why.
Well, it'd be
win. They're in the middle of a rebuild. No, they're not in the middle of a rebuild.
No, I think win now is 18-19 when they get Drew Doughty.
That ain't gonna happen. No, but you know what? Here's the thing. And here's where a lot of teams, and maybe you throw Pittsburgh into this mix because I believe they're kicking tires on him when he may have been available before. I think the wild card for them maybe is, you know, how can they at all get Jacob Trouba out of Winnipeg?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that to me
that's
is the guy.
Point.
That to me is the guy. If you can somehow get Trouba out of Winnipeg, then I'll be loving what Pittsburgh's doing a whole lot more.
Speaking of the Leafs, what do you like? Do you like the idea of potentially Ilya Kovalchuk skating with Austin Matthews?
No. I mean, I don't know, though. I mean, he's been playing in the Russian Recreational League now for a while, so I don't know what version. Like, I don't know who's coming back. Like, honestly, yeah. Isn't that the wild card to all of it? We think he's going to come back and snipe 40. I don't know.
No, I agree with
honestly,
Travis.
Honestly, we did know about Radulov, and I still don't know about. Now, what did Yost say about him?
Yost said that if you run the numbers on a player of his age, you're mm-hmm. ending up with maybe a 60 to 65 point player. Which is great.
But what are you going to pay that player? He's going to want $6 million. You're going to pay $6 million for him?
That's the issue, is the money. But, you know, money's not the issue if you're the Leafs right now. The issue would be term.
Term.
I mean, if you can get Kovalchuk for the next couple of years at $6 million, it's worth it. If you get Kovalchuk and he's asking for 5 years and all of a sudden it's going to monkey around with the other contracts you have to start handing out, that's the issue.
Yeah. It almost as if, it seems as if, and I'm sure the player wouldn't like this, that he'll need a show-me year like Radulov.
Mm. Right? To get the money
What's
he's
there?
Looking for. Yeah.
Who are you? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but I don't know where his landing spot is. That's
I think his best.
One. I know there's a lot of people that say Montreal, but I'm not so sure.
Yeah, his best landing spot to me is going to be a place like, well, see, I think his best landing spot is a place like Toronto or Edmonton, where there's youth. He's good in the room, despite what everybody thinks of him.
That's right.
The Devils loved him.
It's true.
And he adds a little bit more of that dangerous offense to a team that's already dangerous offensively. I don't want him with Tavares. I think that's a bad spot. I think the Islanders are a bad spot. but they might pay him what he's looking for on the island because they're also trying to keep Tavares there.
Right. And that's an interesting one come July 1.
And Andrew Ladd wasn't enough to
he was injured at the beginning of this year. He came on in the end when he was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of interesting. I mean, there's JT. There's also, you know, what happens with Carey Price in Montreal come July 1.
Yeah, that's true too.
What's Connor McDavid's number on July 1?
It's going to be
Andrei
whatever
Seidel's number.
Based on their hiring, it's going to be whatever the Flyers give them on an offer sheet, isn't it?
Oh my! I've been saying all along that if I'm the Ora Group, I'm saying $14 million for McDavid.
Sure.
Look around. Look at the rank. Look at the development. Look at the jerseys. Look at the packed rink. Look at the playoffs. It's one guy.
God, I wish this league wasn't a bunch of well, I was going to say cucks, but you know that's that word's been stolen by the right. But as far as everybody, all these old boys not tendering off, the offer sheet should be used to destroy teams like Edmonton.
That's why I like what Dello proposed in The Athletic with Colton Parayko, which got tutted on Leafs Lunch. But his point is a completely valid one.
Yeah.
It makes sense at every level. It makes sense for the Maple Leafs pragmatically. Listen, if you're going to be drafting in the 20s for the next 4 or 5 years, what do you care about first-round picks?
Right. I'm
close to winning now. Get a sure thing.
Go I don't know it. How. I don't know how. The bottom line in the NHL in 2017 is that there is a finite number of franchise-level defensemen available. Well, no, let me rephrase that. There's a finite number of franchise-level defensemen, and they're never available. And that's why you had people pumping the tires of Sammy Vatanen. Oh, my God, Sammy Vatanen might be available. Oh, stop the presses. Yeah. But, like, the idea that you wouldn't offer sheet those guys every time they come up is insane to me. Like, do the Philly Weber thing every time there's a defenseman up. Because if they don't match, you get yourself a top-pairing defenseman that you can only otherwise get through the draft. If they do match, well, you've effed them against the cap in perpetuity. Like, it's
The key is it can only work when it's the final piece of something. The offer sheet makes no sense if it's the beginning of a rebuild. But you find yourself a team that's at the end of their build and they need one last piece. Then you do it. That's the only time it makes sense. Which is why anyone brings up another example of other failed offer sheets for teams. But just ask yourself, how close was that team to winning? And if you believe that the Maple Leafs are in the middle of a rebuild, then Parayko makes no sense. But if you look at it a little more legitimately and say to yourself, well, hang on a second. No, the rebuild's done. Look at all those forwards and a couple of defensemen. They have the goaltender. You say to yourself, yeah, they're that one piece away. It makes sense. But you just have to know. And you have to understand where a team is. And when you've spent the last year, you know, convincing yourself that this team is in the middle of a rebuild, ignoring how it's a 100-point pace past, you know, from January on, then you say to yourself, oh, yeah, they're still in the middle of a rebuild. You need picks. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
They're picking 17th this year. You think they're going up or down in the draft next year. I've got
they're
news for it. It'll be in the 20s.
Picks and money. Money and picks. That's what they got. And they're going to use it.
So that one to me, Dello to me made a ton of sense for anyone paying attention.
If you think Colton's that good.
I really do too. Oh man, Joel Edmondson looking. Like one of the things, it's funny, I was going back and thinking about the conversations we were having at the beginning of the playoffs. Man, Joel Edmondson looked real good, hey?
Yeah.
And the other thing about the Parayko offer sheet is, you know, you force the predatory nature of it, you force St. Louis into a situation where they have to make another move in order to accommodate the offer sheet.
Right.
But I'm with you. But isn't there a part of you that looks at it and says, Lou, come on. Now you're writing. Like, come on. Like, what do you care?
Well,
like, honestly, it's like you have to work with these people for another 20 years in the
NHL. But the more practical answer to why there aren't more offer sheets is mutually assured destruction. Like, at some point, it'll come back to revisit you when you've got one of your guys up and they have the cap space that they're going to come after your guy.
Oh, so competition. We keep hearing about it. It's a results-oriented industry, and they compete against one another. I'm sorry. I'm disconnected here. I don't understand.
I guess there's another word for it, yeah. let's stay on the Preds for a second. Their window is wide open, man. Like, their core is young. As long as Pekka has a couple more years left in them, I think they're wide open.
Hey, I'd be looking for a goalie ASAP.
You don't think Saros is the guy?
Oh no! I like UC Saros.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think goaltending is not their concern.
They've got this. You have Ekholm in at a very reasonable 3.7. You have Ryan Ellison at 2.5. You have Yossi at $4 million, and this has been. I know PK Subban makes all of the money at 9, but you know the idea that Nashville could. You know, while the perception is out there that Roman Yossi is this elite-level defenseman that everybody has now discovered and stumbled upon, when really the actual underlying numbers will tell you otherwise, do you look at trading him?
He's an elite offensive defenseman.
Can you bring in an elite level forward to compensate for losing that defenseman, knowing that you have Ekholm, Ellis, and Subban?
Well, that's the good thing about having David Poile as your GM, is that that's not a guy who colors around the edges. He throws the paint in the middle of the picture. That's a guy who will get aggressive and make the necessary changes he thinks he needs to make in order to keep this team contending. But damn, man, like Forsberg, Arvidsson, on and on and on. Like the team's primed to be good for a while, which, by the way, is great news
Kevin
for the NHL.
Kevin Fiala, Kamenev coming. Like, there's good. Pontus Auberg. Like,
it's great news for the NHL because if you think about the way that the NHL structures their television here in the U.S., you're not seeing a lot of the Canadian teams in the Western Conference or lesser lights in the Western Conference unless they're playing someone in the East or they're playing Chicago. So to have another team that I think people are going to be interested in checking out, especially when they play at home, like Nashville, is only a good thing. And now you've got another team in the West.
Did America dig on the Preds?
Damn, they did. Oh,
they did,
Oh, yeah. The whole atmosphere, it was a huge crossover thing where media that wouldn't normally cover the Stanley Cup Final were covering the proceedings in Nashville and the catfish and the country music and the 75,000 people or whatever the hell it was on Game 6 outside to watch the game and stuff. It was definitely their moment. And like I've been saying everywhere, like, it's several years in the making. This isn't going to be a situation where all of a sudden they're drawing 12,000 next year because they're not as good as they were this year. Like, it's a hockey town, and it's going to be a hockey town for a while, until things like go south or they get real cynical. It's a great thing for hockey.
This is a good team, and especially now where the West has started to level off a little bit, Chicago coming back to the pack. Like, there's no one who's running away with the Western Conference. A lot of the talent has gone from the West to the East. The East rise up, look what the Metro did this year. To me, the better conference is the East right now. So, listen, man, the West is jump ball. And it probably, will be jump ball for a while as no one is clearly distinguishing themselves. I know Oilers fans might say, hold on a second here. We're a move or two away from being a juggernaut in the Western Conference. But no one is, as of, right now, distinguished themselves as the new Chicago Blackhawks in the West.
Right.
So why not? I could see Nashville right back in the final in the same way that your point about, the dynasty of three, you can see the Pittsburgh Penguins back in the final next year. Can't you?
Totally. Absolutely. Let's talk about the Golden Knights for a second. So it's
sure.
the worst kept secret in hockey was that Marc-Andre Fleury was going to head there. The question is, do you think it's going to be
a
stopgap?
Yeah,
is he going to stay there, or is he going to be repurposed to another team? Because the problem is that the musical chairs of teams needing goaltenders stopped, and like the only team that needs one is Calgary. I mean, maybe
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Yeah, okay. Like I said, the only team that needs one is Calgary because there's no way in the hell Marc-Andre Fleury is ever going to be playing
Philadelphia. Oh, come on. You're a pro wrestling guy. You love the sound of that. You love it.
Do you want to hear what it sounds like when the home team fans chant Fleury, Fleury, if he messes up in the first game of the season? That's going to sound like. No, I think here's another intriguing idea, and keep this in mind. Keep this in your back pocket. There's only one reason why Robin Lehner's on the Buffalo Sabres, and that reason got fired.
Yep.
So Marc-Andre Fleury with the Sabres. What do you think about that?
I could totally see it.
Yeah.
I have a strong belief that I'm sure that there are a lot of people above the coaching position that are not in love with Robin Lehner.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Murray, paid us a pretty big price tag to get him in the first place.
Boy, did he.
And here comes Jason Botterill from the Pittsburgh Penguins, who has a relationship with Marc-Andre Fleury. Oh yeah, I can see it all day, every day.
Who was in A Few Good Men with Kevin Bacon? That's right, you figured out the connection. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I agree. I think that's the spot. I know Calgary's all like, come here, come play. We love you. I think Buffalo's the play. If they want to spend the dough and get him, I think that's the play. That said, I also think there's something to be said for the Golden Knights having a goalie that might be able to make them a little bit better than they should be next year. And with due respect to Grubauer And Ranta and all those other cats, I think Fleury's that guy. So I think that's also an interesting prospect, is maybe you want a charismatic, awesome dude to be your goalie and maybe your you know, one of your faces of your franchise if things don't work out trade-wise.
Great piece of marketing too, right? Vegas acquires three-time Stanley Cup champion Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, and he's a smiley dude, and he's a happy dude, and people will dig him there, and he's a great guy to have in the room for a team that obviously might have some real dark times as an expansion team. So mm-hmm. I think either way they win. If they find someone to take him, they win. If he stays on the roster, they win.
I wonder how many picks Vegas ends up with at this year's draft from all these deals.
The entire third round.
Third round? How about the entire first round? Like, honestly, if you're trying to throw him anchor contracts, I mean, honestly, McPhee can just collect up first round picks. Why not?
It's going to be interesting to see how many vets he takes and how many that stay on the team. Like a James Neal, Molson probably. I saw one projection that said Camilleri from the Devils. I think that's actually a really good pick for them, to be honest with you. He's a fun guy. He's a good face of the franchise kind of guy.
And which unrestricted free agent signed there?
And do their names rhyme with Blamier Blogger?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way.
With the Florida Panthers turning over a new leaf, and there's a new coach. Resetting.
He will never work with Yager again.
Dude, it's a showbiz. Where there's money, there's understanding. And oh, yeah.
All right, let's talk about two coaching things before we get to some listener mail. Bugner in Florida, you like?
Very much a Dale Talon move, don't you think?
Yep.
Yeah, very much sounds like this. Very much feels like a Dale. This is, because if it were Dallas Eakins, I'd say to myself, okay, this is a lot of, you know, collectively, you know, the brain trust gets together and he's a strong analytics guy and boom. But this one feels like this is Dale Talon saying, you know, Bob Bugner has, you know, an old schoolish mentality. He is our guy.
Yeah. He basically rehired Gerard Gallant. I mean, let's be honest. They got rid of the guy that he liked, and he rehired a guy very much in his image.
Players love him, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, the players will love him. He knows a lot of them from his time in the OHL, whether it's Aaron Ekblad, whether it's Vincent Trocheck. Like, there's a lot of those players he already knows. It's a good starting spot for him as a head coach.
You think? Because
this thing can turn around fast. I mean, they do need to lose some of this, you know, I always harp on Yager about this one, but as long as you have Yager as your first line right winger, I just wonder about how far you're going to go regular season or otherwise. If they can, you know, cut that cord and move on and find someone else on the right side with Barkov and Huberto, like this thing can turn around quick.
Yeah.
I really do believe Florida will be a fascinating team. Florida's going to be one of the more interesting teams next year.
Three great young forwards and a franchise-level defenseman who now has Bugner in his ear. That's only a good thing.
Yeah. I think it's a good hire. And he knows how to work with kids, obviously.
And speaking of the Sabres, I have offered my full-throated endorsement of Phil Housley as their next coach.
Phil Housley or Rick Tocchet, sir?
I know it's going to be one of the two, and I say Housley because I know the trend is hire your guy who works with defensemen as the assistant. I say buck the trend. I think this is a guy who is ready to be a head coach. I think this mm-hmm. is a team that desperately needs someone to figure out a thing or two on their defense. I think he coaches his philosophy on what defensemen should do is very much forward thinking for 2017. I like Tocchet for the experience, because Phil doesn't have any experience as a head coach, basically. You know, he was a head coach for a tournament team, but not for a team for a full season. I like Tocchet's experience, and I like Tocchet's relationship with Phil Kessel vis-a-vis a potential relationship with Jack Eichel. And there's a very good chance he gets hired because of the Botterill connection. I also think that Jason Botterill got hired by the Sabres after waiting years to get his shot to run a show. And why doesn't he do the same thing for Phil Housley? Think outside the box. Hire the guy who may not on paper have the necessary experience, but may actually be the guy you need.
So they don't go with an ex-Pittsburgh coach or assistant coach twice in a row. Well, Biles on the Tocchet.
There's that too. Yeah, Basel was part of that culture, wasn't it?
Yeah, it'll be one of those two. Let's do some mail here before we punt.
All right, here we go. First of all, a correction, as some of the readers have pointed out, or listeners rather. Mm-hmm. Because of Montreal and Calgary, the Oilers never actually had three in a row. It was the Islanders are the last team to have three in a row.
Right. Oh, yeah, Steve Smith.
That's cool. Right. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Mustard Lips wants to know, the 2017 season will forever be remembered as the season of blank. What are you filling that blank with?
Video review.
Oh,
parsing off sides.
Thank you so much for saving me from having to come up with an answer on the spot. That's a great answer.
Oh, yeah, video of driving ourselves crazy about video review. Everybody hating it, yet everyone at the league office saying everything's working great. And this is what we wanted. Going full well, this is what nobody wanted. We didn't want the Duchesne call. That's what we didn't want.
Yeah.
Instead, we got this.
Yeah.
I ordered apple pie. Don't you love lemon meringue?
Yeah.
Isn't it great?
We wanted to make sure there wasn't an egregious offside that resulted in a goal. And then we got a thing where now we're counting the number of pixels between a guy's skate blade and the ice. It's maddening.
Oh.
Michael Perino wants to know, what trade, move, or bribe are you most looking forward to? I assume he means vis-a-vis the Vegas Golden Knights. I am fascinated to see what Anaheim does to get out of their pickle.
Anaheim or Minnesota. Anaheim/ Minnesota. Those are the two that I'm most curious about.
Because they wagered on that team getting, I guess, as far as they did, maybe getting farther, and really left themselves in the lurch. There was no ground laid, pretty much, to figure out something. I mean, you assume that they have some deal in place with Vegas, but it's going to cause them some pain. They're over a barrel right now.
Well, and they don't have their first round pick this year.
Yeah.
Right? That was the Eves deal that ended up going to Dallas. Because they got so far. So they don't even have the 29th overall to entice George McPhee with. Now, many might say, that's okay, because next year's draft is a significantly deeper one than this year. Okay, fine, we'll take next year's first round pick.
Mm-hmm. One more here. This is kind of related. One question is, with four cups and a gold medal, is Chris Kunitz Hall of Fame worthy from Alex Wilson? And that brings us to the other question from Rob Feeney, which is, who from these Penguins teams ends up in the Hall of Fame besides 87 and 71? So you have Fleury and Letang. I mean, this is without figuring out what Murray ends up being.
Yeah, we don't know about Murray yet. Kunitz has, 200 goals. Sure, he has the cups. But I don't put a whole big stock in that, or else Marcel Dion and Gilbert Perreault don't make it in.
Mm-hmm. Chris Kunitz is Chris Osgood of forwards.
You can't put Chris Kunitz in the Hall of Fame.
No, you can't.
Although, if you're one of those people that think you got to reward the individuals for being part of outstanding teams, he kind of does have that hardware. A cup with Anaheim, three with Pittsburgh, gold medal.
Kessel, Hall of Famer?
Let's see how the career winds up. I think if he would have won a Conn Smythe trophy last year, he would have warmed to the conversation. No, I honestly can't see anyone other than 87 or 71.
296 goals in 832 games, and he's 29. So?
Yeah, no.
He projects through 10 years, according to Hockey Reference. They have those, projections things.
Yeah.
Around Brendan Shanahan's type career, around Jeremy Roenick's type career. And for his career...
I wouldn't put Roenick in.
He lines up with Cam Neely. That's sort of, numbers. And Neely, of course, is, your bottom rung of the ladder as far as guys climbing into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Okay. I hate doing the based on, because there's so many examples of guys that have been allowed in that open the door for other players that you look at and you say, no way, this guy can't be Hall of Fame. But the, well, what about argument pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it bad when you sort of, do a favor for someone.
Yeah. And let's not forget about the most important thing for a Hall of Famer, which is that most of the people inside that room don't like Phil. And that's always a factor.
It's part of it. Kept Eric out for a long time. Kept Pat Burns out for a long time.
Kept Pat Burns out through his death. Those bastards.
Oh, Jesus. That was embarrassing.
Sorry, there
are two people to blame for that, and I don't think they listen to this podcast. But
so you want to mention their names?
Nah.
All right.
When they pass on, I will.
Mm-hmm. So there you go, everybody.
Because that'll be really classy of me.
murder the Hall of Fame selection committee one by one, judges in the Pelican Brief, and Merrick will let you know which one of your murder victims kept Pat Burns out of the Hall of Fame.
There were two.
Oh, by the way,
from what I've been told,
please don't murder anybody because I made that joke. Because it's a weird world out there. we had a guy shoot up a pizza place in Washington D.C. because he was convinced that the internet told him there was a pedophile ring being run out of there.
Yeah.
So please don't kill and murder. No. Please don't murder death kill the Hall of
this
Fame.
This is only a podcast, folks. This is made for giggles and laughs and every now and then to tickle your brain.
Now, are you going to Chicago?
I am going to Chicago. I'm leaving next Thursday.
So we have to figure out some level of meetup type deal at some point. I don't know when. Maybe Thursday. Who the hell knows? We'll figure it out.
Ollie's got it done, man.
Are you going to go on? Are you around Thursday night?
I am around Thursday night, yeah. I've got rehearsals all day Thursday, though, but I'll definitely be there for Thursday night.
Let's figure out Thursday night and figure out if we can do something then. I think that's probably the best time to do it.
Yeah, totally.
And then we'll figure it out. So for all of you asking, Jeffy and I are both in Chicago. We'll do a meetup someplace, and everyone is gonna have a great time.
I think Bigford's got it planned. I think she's got the whole thing sussed out. So I'll connect with her and we'll figure it out.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, there you go.
And
done.
And
you don't have to do a thing.
Woo! All right. Right? Thanks, everybody.
Hey, hang on. How was Vegas for you, bud?
You mean Nash Vegas?
Yeah. Oh, no. Sorry, Nashville. How was Nashville for you?
Nash Vegas was too much. It was too much. When we were talking about how long the playoffs felt, it felt extra long because a nonstop diet of barbecue and beer and long nights with our writer friends really took a toll on your boy. It was Yeah, and plus I got a little sick towards the end, so I had I'm physically exhausted right now, but it's fine.
Dude.
It's part and parcel of the thing. I'm just happy that everybody, you know, had a good time reading the stuff. The nonsense stories about Caps fans becoming Penguins fans and Catfish guy being arrested and the NBC, you know, trying to trade NBC hats for Mike Mulberry signs. I'm happy that I was able to bring you all stories beyond the ice whilst covering the series.
Beyond the rink. Hey, okay, so here's my DM from Allie. So it looks like it's the 22nd at Crossroads on Madison. There it is, Crossroads on Madison.
Crossroads on Madison is the bar.
Yeah, man.
On the 22nd. That's a Thursday. All right.
That's
Thursday. I have to figure out how to get back from Vegas and get to that bar.
Hang on, you're going to the draft, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard, we had some staff reductions.
Yes.
So, I'm going to the draft, yeah.
Okay, good.
All right. So, I'll see
you again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a long time.
Been a long time. All right, we'll
talk
we'll
at
see you
guys
soon. Yeah, exactly. All right, everybody. Bye.